Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the M&A podcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. In this episode, we're finding out about M&A in private equity in Asia. How is the global trend for general partner consolidation reflected in the region? And what do limited partners make of it? Well, to find out, I spoke to Justin Niesner, who's the associate editor of the Asian Venture Capital Journal. Hi, Justin. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So could we start with looking at the global trend? There's been lots happening in the private equity industry in recent years. We've got smaller funds launching, but much of the money that's going into private equity funds is going to the bigger funds. There are higher interest rates and there are some big challenges when it comes to private equity exits. Also, we've got investors pushing for higher EBITDA growth when firms do deals. Against the backdrop of all of that, could you briefly touch on the drivers for consolidation in private equity?
Well, it's an interesting theme, isn't it? I mean, GP consolidation, and we're talking about GPs like the fund managers acquiring other fund managers and getting bigger. A lot of the themes that you just mentioned are kind of feeding into that, and people see it as part of an inevitable part of a longer cycle. In other words, less competitive managers are kind of being flushed out as they get absorbed into larger organizations. It's interesting to think of it as a cycle, though, because, I mean, there's an interesting duality to this in the sense that it is cyclic, but it's also unprecedented because the industry has never been at the scale it is right now. So we haven't seen like a previous cusp to the cycle where we saw a great spike in GP consolidation. So it's cyclic, but it's happening for the first time. And I think it's, you know, most people interpret this as a sign of maturity in the industry. GPs are being run more like the businesses that they acquire. They're using M&A as a tool to not just to access markets and capabilities for their portfolio companies, but for themselves. The biggest headlines around this are the biggest players. We saw last year, we saw BlackRock acquire HPS, a credit manager, in a $12 billion transaction. The year before that, they acquired GIP, an infrastructure manager, that was $12.5 billion transaction. But the transformational deals like that are hard to do. It's hard to get the valuations right and the integration of the organizations, get the culture of the teams right. So most of the action is more opportunistic. It's happening more in the middle market, the smaller deals that a lot of times are happening kind of under the radar. There's some industry data suggesting that most of the GP consolidation, GP-GP M&A is happening with fund managers that are kind of in the $2 billion to $5 billion assets under management range. There's not a lot of really good statistics around this. One organization that is doing it, Campbell Lutyens, the advisory firm, by their count, and they set up a unit specifically to deal with GP mergers because it's really happening a lot more lately. By their count, 71 control action transactions last year, 71 times a GP acquired another GP globally. That's up quite a bit from previous years where it's only been about 45 deals a year in that space. So it is picking up, and that's being driven substantially by succession issues. GPs, you know, maybe having leadership problems where they don't have their leadership teed up as much as or as well as they should. So they find themselves finding a solution for that by being absorbed into another firm.
Thank you. And so there are some bigger deals. When it comes to GP consolidation globally, there are some bigger deals, but there's a lot of action also in the middle market. Could you explain how that trend or those trends have been reflected in the region that you cover, which is Asia?
Yeah, a lot of the action in Asia is really, it's a lot of minority stakes actually in Asia, and these kind of so-called partnerships where GPs are taking minority positions in each other and working together. Some people in the advisory world are telling me that that's a prelude to acquisitions and that these will eventually become control deals. And there is some evidence that that is happening more and more. I mean, just in the past month, we had CBC Group, that's a Singapore-based healthcare manager, merging with GHO Capital. It's their kind of UK counterpart that does healthcare in Europe. That's an interesting one because they have the same strategy. And usually these kinds of mergers are about expanding into new strategies. Like I'm a private equity manager and I want to add infrastructure or add credit or what have you. So for two healthcare managers to combine like that is pretty interesting. Even more recently than that, just Asia-wise, we had Hill House Investment Management acquiring Barwon Investment Partners. That's an Australian real assets manager. So we're seeing a lot of stuff like that happening. I mean, the bigger headline deals in Asia are Ares Management, I think, is the biggest global actor. They've acquired several sizable Asian GPs. And maybe the one that gets talked about the most is EQT acquiring Baring Private Equity Asia a couple of years ago for $7.5 billion. So look, it is coming to Asia. It's an emerging trend in our part of the world, but it is starting to happen. We're seeing some big deals and a lot of stuff in the middle market.
What kind of factors would pave the way for more consolidation in Asia?
Yeah, what's going to make this happen in Asia? It's the same forces that are driving it globally to some extent, but there'll be some Asian nuances to it. I mean, overall, it's going to be a lot of smaller GPs getting forced into it because it's of various competitive market pressures. I mean, like you said in the beginning, difficult exit environment, difficult fundraising environment. It's a tightening macroeconomic environment in general. And on top of all that, you're going to have to invest in technology. People need to invest in AI. Maybe they don't have the resources for that. So it's a resource-constrained environment. And the way that you handle that, I mean, usually GPs will sell a minority stake, use that capital for some kind of a strategic expansion to add capabilities to be more competitive. But if it's really a difficult environment, they might end up selling out completely. And that's really what drives this consolidation trend. That gets exacerbated by the fact that the people who are consolidating become more competitive. So if you stay independent, then it's all the more difficult to stay independent because all your competitors are now souped up in larger organizations. Interesting context in Asia. I mean, that's kind of the global picture. And that's potentially worse in Asia for a lot of firms because Asia is not a core allocation for a lot of global allocators, you know, into private markets funds. So if they pull back to their home markets, they're going to pull back to the US and they're going to pull back in Europe. It just makes life harder in Asia for GPs, and that could push people into some consolidation situations. If you're an Asian manager and you had an LP base of US endowments, for example, and now you suddenly have to switch to Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds or something, maybe you don't have the infrastructure to pivot in that way, and that will kind of lead you into consolidation situation. The other interesting thing about Asia is that a lot of the managers here are much more founder-led than what you might see in the US or Europe, less institutional, relatively speaking. So that could spell more trouble in terms of succession. They need more succession solutions in Asia because of that instability in the leadership of the GPs. And so there's a possibility that could drive more succession in Asia. The other thing about Asia, if you go market to market, I mean, obviously, we'll mention China just to keep it brief, but because it's kind of the elephant in the room. But I mean, in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of global capital rotating out of China, which makes it difficult for those managers to survive. So that could drive consolidation, maybe especially in something like China Venture, where, you know, if you're raising US dollar funds in China Venture, that could be quite a tight market, and we could see some consolidation out of that.
So could you talk about the perspective from Asian LPs? What are they saying privately or publicly about the GP consolidation?
Yeah, the Asian LP perspective is interesting. We talk about this trend, like how relevant is this trend in Asia? It's already as relevant as it can be if we're talking about the Asian LPs, because the Asian LPs are investors in the global funds that are like the BlackRocks and the EQTs that are doing these big deals. So they're already involved in it. We don't see as many GP on GP mergers in Asia, but we do see LPs in Asia reacting to the drivers of the trend in general. I'll just kind of, one thing that comes to mind, and in the last decade, we've seen this development of alliances between asset managers and insurance companies in the US. That's kind of moved to Europe, and we're starting to see that in Asia. And what I'm talking about there is global asset managers buying insurance companies, buying reinsurance vehicles to build out their own insurance platforms inside the asset manager. I mean, these are insurance companies historically in the kind of private funds paradigm. These are the limited partners. They're the LPs that invest in the manager's funds. So to be acquired by an asset manager is kind of a vertical GP LP consolidation. That's the way I think of it. I mean, if you think of a GP acquiring another GP as a horizontal consolidation, GPs and LPs acquiring each other is an interesting vertical consolidation that we're seeing globally. It's coming more to Asia, and there is some reason to think that that will accelerate based on some of the things we said before. The other thing that's relevant from the LP perspective, I mean, it's not just a matter of what they want, really. I mean, some of the LPs, there's a bit of indigestion with this whole theme of large cap managers becoming more mega-sized. So they're moving more down to the middle market and the lower middle market. This is the stuff that comes out more publicly. And of course, they're going down into the middle market because they see more opportunity for outsized returns. But there is also, I think, some indigestion with the whole mega cap consolidation theme. So they want to, you know, look around for maybe single strategy middle market managers. So we're seeing some movement on that. But yeah, they want flexibility in strategies. They like the one-stop shop that comes with consolidation. One interesting thing that we've seen in Asia in terms of what LPs are doing. So the consolidation trend in general, people do it because they want to get access to new strategies, new geographies, new capabilities. But some LPs in Asia are using it to kind of realize some specific strategic moves. I was told by one advisory firm working on a GP deal in Asia that one of the LPs involved is a sovereign wealth fund. It took a GP stake in one of the GPs involved with the agreement that they would support them on a specific China investment project. So, you know, we think about these GPs getting swept up in these, think about LPs getting swept up in these GP M&A deals, but they do have some agency and they're kind of exploiting it just like any other counterparty.
And could you talk about what you've heard from Asian LPs? You spoke to 27 people for your article across the industry, but what are Asian LPs saying about GP consolidation?
It's been mixed feedback, mixed to negative, I might say. There's been quite a few concerns. I mean, the main issue is just this kind of mega-sizing of managers and going multi-strategy. There's a lot of concern that this is about asset gathering and creating a machine that runs on fees rather than being incentivized to maximize returns. So there's a base level of suspicion around that. And the idea that managers, as they get bigger, they become less agile. The value proposition of private equity, I think, is to be agile and to be able to take care of opportunities as they come into view. So the bigger you become, you kind of lose that original value proposition. What's maybe more uniquely Asian, or what's interesting in the Asia context, is when we see these GP on GP acquisitions, a lot of times it's a global manager acquiring an Asia-based manager. And kind of the sweetener or the pitch for that is that the acquired manager is going to get a new pipeline for fundraising capital. The acquiring GP has a big LP base. And so if you're the smaller acquired GP, you're going to get access to that LP base and it'll make future fundraising easier. But I think the experience that people get a lot of the times is quite the opposite. The larger entity ends up using the relationship as a way to pitch to the LPs of the smaller GP. And so that cross-selling of funds by the enlarged GP to the acquired relationships, you know, pitching to the new LPs in the consolidation deal is not always well received. There's some aggressive marketing around that. I heard from one Asian insurance company that was saying the marketing around that, they say, well, you've got to invest in one of these new funds that we're offering, or you're going to be scaled back in the funds you already have, the ones that you like. And they could cut you back as much as 80% if you don't play ball and put in a fund commitment into one of these new funds. So that kind of high-pressure marketing around the cross-selling of funds has not been well received. The other point that's interesting on this is that the acquiring entity is often listed, which means that for stock market protocol reasons, they're unable to communicate prior to actual a public announcement. And so the LPs really feel out of control when these deals are finally announced. And a lot of that comes down to communication. I mean, the LPs want to know about the changes in decision-making, the changes in the key person situation, how the strategy is changing, if the acquired, what's the level of autonomy with the GP that's getting acquired. Most of these concerns are coming from the LPs in the acquired GP. And if that communication is not forthcoming, then the acquired relationships, the incoming LPs, they don't have a relationship with the acquiring GP, and that can be rather unpleasant. We've also been told that this is changing the way people are doing due diligence, the way they think about how they're going to commit to new managers, committing to funds, putting in more measures to preserve alignment of interest, and they're looking more closely at spin-out risk, whether the individuals within the GP are going to have the, you know, to what extent they have ambitions to monetize the fund management entity down the track.
So would you say that the LPs that you've spoken to are fundamentally unhappy about this consolidation because of that high pressure marketing, because the acquirer is often listed so that there's no conversation prior to a deal? And is there anything they can do about it if they are unhappy, except put their money somewhere else once the fund period has ended?
Yeah, that's kind of their nuclear option, isn't it? I mean, that's the way they can act. They can put their money somewhere else in the subsequent vintage and say, we're not going to re-up in this fund. They could also give bad reviews. I mean, if other LPs come to them and look for a reference and say, what's it like to invest in this manager, then they can lay it on the line and say, this has been a very unpleasant experience. But no, I wouldn't say that they're fundamentally unhappy. I mean, in fact, it does seem that there's a lot of negative sentiment from LPs around the consolidation trend, but the LPs are actually driving this trend. I mean, and they do want a reduced number of GP relationships in a lot of cases. So they want to have less admin around dealing with GPs, fewer GPs, but more strategies. So if you want fewer GPs and more strategies, I mean, you're really driving consolidation right there. They like the one-stop strategy diversification and the cross-strategy synergies, the professionalized succession plans, and all the advantages that come with scale, including being able to invest in stuff like cybersecurity. You can do that, you know, more easily if you're a scaled manager. And those kind of issues are top of mind for a lot of LPs. So no, I mean, they're driving it. And it kind of goes back to this idea of GP consolidation being a sign of maturity in the industry. Shaking out the weaker GPs, the scaled GPs have some efficiency advantages, even if they lose some agility. You know, in Asia, it's interesting. I mean, even the LPs that operate in Asia, where they prefer small single strategy GPs, they're warming up to this idea of multi-strategy GPs and understanding that because of market conditions, they do have to get bigger and be more multi-strategy. This came up in the last AVCJ conference, the AVCJ forum in Singapore. We heard from Sunil Mishra, that's a Singapore-based partner at Adams Street Partner. And he was basically saying, look, we prefer the small, smallish middle market, single strategy GPs, but it's a complex world now. So if you buy a company with a PE strategy, that company is probably going to have some kind of a real estate component to its business that has to be dealt with. And, you know, do you have the expertise to do that? Elwin Chai was at the same conference, and that's a managing director at La Caisse. And he was saying, look, La Caisse is a multi-strategy organization. So, of course, we want our counterparties to be multi-strategy as well, because there's more touch points for us to work together. So, yeah, I mean, we're seeing some warm up on that. Even the idea of, you know, more large LPs coming down to the mid-market, in theory, that puts pressure on the LPs that are already there. Like if you're a global pension fund and you decide because of GP consolidation, you're going to do more stuff in the middle market, theoretically, that puts pressure on the LPs that are already there because they're going to get a smaller piece of the pie. But that's not the feedback I've gotten. I mean, they're really not threatened about it. They see, I mean, I think the consensus is it's difficult to play in the middle market unless you have relationships, so they can help them scale down. If you're an LP that's already in the middle market, you can, you know, help these larger LPs, you know, in terms of, you know, creating new relationships. So yeah, they're eking out the benefits from the consolidation trend, just like the GPs are.
Could you briefly touch on what separates good and bad outcomes or good and bad practice when looking at deals in GP consolidation?
Yeah, we talk a lot about this at the high level, but at the transaction level, it's pretty interesting. You know, what makes these work and what makes these not work at a transaction level? I mean, what we're hearing from the LP side is really it's all about communication. You want to keep all the counterparties feeling like they're not, you know, out of the loop. There's different schools about what's enough in terms of communication. I mean, do you reach out to every single LP, which is what we saw with General Atlantic when they acquired Actis, the infrastructure manager, in 2024. The chairman of General Atlantic reaching out to 180 LPs, I think blocking out a couple of days just to put in all these phone calls. You know, so that's one school of thought. I mean, not everyone thinks that that's feasible or worthwhile. I mean, obviously, you can't ask permission from all your small LPs to do something or you'll never get anything done. But even if it's after the fact, just to inform them all about what's going on is maybe not necessary. There's a school of thought that you should maybe, it's only necessary to communicate with the LPAC investors. In other words, the LP advisory committee, the investors, the main LPs in a given fund. So yeah, what makes it work or what makes it not work? It's maybe more about, less about the legal and technical issues of the deal than alignment of interest, which is, you know, you could say about any M&A transaction, any, it doesn't have to be GP-GP, any M&A deal, alignment of interest is probably going to be what makes it work or what makes it not work. And alignment in these situations is about compensation. How does the carried interest, you know, get shared between the acquiring GP and the acquired GP? I think, you know, some of what I've heard is that, you know, 70%, it's good for the acquired team to retain at least 70% of carry, and then maybe 30% of the carried interest can go to the acquiring team. So, you know, working around those issues is part of the alignment thing. The thing that's really different, makes these kinds of GP-GP M&A different than any other industry, is the pronounced kind of factor of personality styles that you see in private equity. It's a really ego-driven industry, and that could be a make or break for these kinds of transactions more than what you would see in any other kind of M&A situation. We heard from Ralph Keitel. This is the lead allocator for the development bank in Switzerland called CIFIM. He's been in the industry for a quarter of a century. Before that, he was with the IFC. And he's been doing this for so long. He says up to two-thirds of all of the GP-GP transactions he's seen have failed simply because of these personality clashes. So that's the ego factor. The way to solve for that, I guess, is, you know, motivation. How do you motivate people? How do you incentivize the acquired team? It's really about taking care of the acquired team, making sure that they have promotions and the right carry exposure, paths to career advancement, and these kinds of things. And you want to prevent talent attrition, basically, because if one person spins out, one person says, I don't want to be a part of this larger organization, I'm going to start my own firm. They get a couple of people from the acquired team to join them, and then the dam breaks, and you lose all your people. And so what are you buying? You know, you're supposed to be buying a team and buying relationships, and they all jump ship. So it's quite an important issue, actually. I'll just add on one point, if you don't mind, because this is an interesting point, like what works and what doesn't work in these transactions. There is some thinking that post-merger integration could be influenced and supported by AI going forward. And I think this is in kind of an emerging area of thought, but theoretically, AI could improve the speed and efficiency of the acquisitions and the integrations simply because, you know, the middle and back office kind of functions in the GP could be automated, so there would be fewer people. And if there's fewer people, then you kind of mitigate the cultural challenges of combining teams of people. I don't know if that's going to be a driver of consolidation, but at the very least, it'll make the transactions more likely to succeed. So, so that might encourage more consolidation.
Yeah, and your point about the ego-driven industry goes back to what you were saying earlier about the founders being so fundamental and a lack of succession planning with some of those mid-market funds.
Yeah, it's an astonishing statistic. I mean, it's not a statistic, but an observation that most of the deals of this kind fail because of personality. I mean, yeah, it goes back to the individuals, the succession, people being very career-driven. And it's a reminder that you're acquiring people, you're acquiring relationships. This isn't really about assets. It's about people. So you're going to have to make sure that you take care of these people. And in this industry, you can have some quite strong personality types.
You said it, Justin. And then rounding up, could we just look at where it's all taking the industry? You spoke about multi-strategy approaches. And how is this trend of GP consolidation, how is it impacting the structure of the private equity industry, focusing specifically on Asia?
Yeah, that's always the million-dollar question, isn't it? Where is this taking us? Yeah, because it's a big trend. It's affecting the entire industry globally. There's a few outlooks. I think the prevailing one is that it's kind of reshaping the industry in a barbell kind of shape. The idea there being that the mid-sized firms are, they're not big enough to compete with against the large consolidated firms, and they're not nimble enough to outmaneuver them either by addressing niche areas like a small player. So if you're in the middle, you're arguably facing a more existential pressures in terms of difficult market conditions forcing you into consolidation. And, you know, there's some evidence for that the shakeout is happening mostly in the middle market. We see a lot of zombie funds piling up in the middle market. So there is some credence to the barbell theory. I mean, there's also just the idea that this is a cyclical thing and that we've never really been in an industry where we've had such a large private equity and private markets industry before, an alternatives industry before globally. So, you know, it's still growing. There's always, you know, if it's growing, that means it's open to new entrants. If there's GP M&A, that will foster spin-outs because people don't want to be a part of a giant group, so they're going to do something new. Even in a difficult fundraising environment, there's a school of thought that GP M&A is going to create more GPs. The whole pretext of this is that big is better, right? I mean, why consolidate unless big is better? And, you know, that could be diminished, like we were saying, with technology. AI could make it less important to be big, to access the benefits of being big. I mean, I've talked to a few people about this, and the one that really resonated with me was the idea of raising capital from retail investors. If you're a very large organization, you've gone through some consolidation, then you'll have the resources to raise large amounts of capital from retail investors, and the smaller GPs won't be able to do that. But there's reason to believe that that could be turned around with technology, and the smaller firms will have those kind of capabilities in the future, or at least the middle market firms will have those kind of capabilities. So, you know, it kind of erodes the logic of GP consolidation. Asia-wise, it's interesting. I mean, if there's one area of consensus, I think it's what's going to happen in Asia. There's a pretty clear outlook that there will be more of this in Asia. We've seen it pick up in the quite recent term, and there's every reason to believe that this is going to happen more in this part of the world. And that's because of what we were saying, the succession drivers. Relatively speaking, a lot of the fund managers here are less institutionalized and are more vulnerable in terms of those succession issues. And so that could kind of feed them into consolidation situations. Likewise, it's just a tough environment over here. Tougher fundraising environment, less global capital going into Asia. difficult operating environment, and consolidation is therefore going to be a lifeline for a lot of the GPs here. So for the next couple of years, at least, I think we can expect it to pick up.
Well, we will be keeping an eye on it. Justin, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Juliana.
That was Justin Niesner, who's the associate editor of the Asian Venture Capital Journal. And just to point out, this episode was recorded on the 1st of June. Thanks for listening to Dealcast, the M&A podcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. Join us again next time.